Oh, whoops. Well, I guess we're not going to get some music here. All right, let me find it.
Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's Friday here on Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and you know what happens on Friday.
Start spreading the news.
You know, Schomburg Stew is here.
In the house, ready to go.
All right, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stew or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays over there, so you can look for something popping up over there sometime tomorrow morning with the weather that we're going to get. I don't think I'm going anywhere. So, yeah, sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, we're still waiting for Stu to jump on the Twitter bandwagon, but you can hunt me down at Burke Time. And as always, I will forward any message you want Stu to get. So there you go. All right, we're rolling along.
All right. Anything exciting going on except for Oakland's crazy decision?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of funny because, you know, the draft pretty much went as expected because the Raiders did something pretty much completely off the wall. You know, they drafted Clellan, I believe it might be pronounced, is it Williams from Clemson? You know, who was a very well-rated defensive lineman. The only problem is most of the ratings I saw had him in the middle 20s to the low 30s.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the Raiders took him at 4. So, sounds like
he might be a good player, that's for sure. I mean, the guy went to Clemson, and he had a lot of good statistics built up over his tenure there, so he might be a good player, but I was really shocked to see him go as number 4 instead of number 25.
Yeah, you know, it was just one of those things where I think they could have just traded down, maybe picked up a couple more picks and still got their guy. You know, if there was somebody who was willing to come up and, see how that kind of works out. And then, what I also realize now is that no matter what the New York Giants do, it's going to be wrong in the eyes of whoever is rating the draft. You know, last year they just freaked out when they didn't take a quarterback and they took Saquon Barkley, who was the best rookie in the league. But it was a mistake for the Giants to pick him. So this year they get their quarterback, and now everybody's crying because they took Daniel Jones instead of Dwayne Haskins.
Well, you know, the New York fans are never going to be happy no matter what they select.
Well, you know, the weird part is it's not so much the fans that I've seen, but all the experts who are, you know, grading the drafts and talking about the drafts and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And it's kind of like, okay, well, if they had this guy scored higher, why shouldn't they have taken him? It's like really, you know.
Well, I got the impression that the Oakland fans weren't too thrilled with the selection either that they made, by the way.
No, I know a couple Raider fans that I work with, and they were a little kind of confused by, what they did. I think they made a better choice. You know, got the 24, they took the running back, the only running back to go in the first round, that Josh Jacobs from Alabama, which was a big, big need for them. So I think he'll fill in nicely. And then they did deal that, they used their third pick on Jonathan Abram, who's a safety down here at 27. And the Raiders haven't had much luck taking defensive backs in the draft early, so hopefully this works out for them.
Yeah, one can only hope, and it's interesting. I know that the Bears select number 87 today. So what time would that be when they make their choice? 2 in the morning?
It'll probably be earlier than that. You figure we're at 33, so we have what?
Another 54 to go?
Yeah, and I think there's, what is it? Is it 10 minutes per pick in the second round? Is that what they cut it to, I believe, for the second and third round?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to
be
hours before, we see a Bears pick or, anything like that. So
maybe around 10 between 10 and 11, perhaps, right? Maybe between 10 and 11 sounds reasonable.
We may get lucky and it may move along faster than projected. But then, of course, it could go the other way and they may not be picking until Christmas.
Yeah, it still astounds me that ABC, the major ABC channel, is devoting two nights in a row on prime TV to have the draft. I just wonder what kind of a ratings they're going to wind up getting with that decision they made.
Well, obviously if they put it on there, it must be it must be doing something for them. So
have they ever done that before in years past? I don't remember them doing that in previous years, that ABC, the major ABC network, would have two nights in a row of primetime TV devoted to the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think they did this last year, but just for the first round.
Okay.
I don't think they they did anything other than that. So, looking at it here, the headline to this article says Thursday cable ratings, NFL draft invades the top slot. So, that was the cable. It looks like the draft on ABC finished second in its time slot. From 8 to 9, the only thing that beat it was the Big Bang Theory.
Well, there's no surprise to that one. That show, I think it's in its last year, and it's been very, very popular for a long time, for many, many years. So it's no surprise they lost to them.
Yeah, it was the second highest rated program on television last night.
In your opinion, why is the NFL draft the most prestigious of all the drafts, but more so than for example, the NBA or any of the other major sports? It seems like the NFL is really a big deal, and not so much in basketball.
Well,
I don't think basketball is nearly as important in the eyes of the fans as the NFL draft.
Well, I think the NBA is getting there. What helps these – the NFL and the NBA is the fact that you draft these guys and then you see them play right away. The MLB network is trying really hard to make the baseball draft seem important. But, of course, the problem is it's like, okay, great, well, we draft this guy and then we don't see him for 4 years.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
So obviously that's part of, or actually probably the main reason I think it does so well is just the fact that, we'll see. I mean, you go over the list of these guys' names and, who were all picked in the first round, and we'll see all these guys play. In one way or the other, barring injury.
What about the quarterbacks, though? What about the quarterbacks who were selected in the first round?
Murray has to play right away. Murray obviously has to play right away for one. Actually, I think the other two, obviously Jones is going to sit behind Eli Manning, And then Haskins will probably at least to start the year, will sit behind Case Keenum. I won't be surprised to see Haskins end up playing mid-season after, you know, whenever their bye comes in, something like that. But I definitely think Jones is just in – he's there to learn.
Right.
So, because, you know, you don't know. I mean, I'm assuming – you know, my guess is now that they drafted the guy that this will be Eli Manning's last year, one way or the other. I know he's already
right.
said that he wants to keep playing, but it won't be in a Giants uniform.
No. I'm trying to think of how many first round quarterback selections have actually made a significant impact on a team that selected them. There can't be too many.
Well, you know, I'm sure there were, some down the line there. I'm trying to think, you know, recently there haven't been. Well, you know, I mean, you look at, you know, Eli's won two Super Bowls. Ben Roethlisberger has a Super Bowl win. Phillip Rivers is one of the better quarterbacks. You know, they were all first round picks. Remember, I think the same draft as well, and Rivers was traded for Manning.
Yeah, but they took a while to develop. I think didn't Roethlisberger take a few years before he settled into that spot?
Yeah, well, you know, that was back when guys didn't really step in and play. They always kind of waited. So, and that's the difficult part now on how to judge these guys because, you know, obviously, I mean, we saw Aaron Rodgers sit behind Brett Favre for what was it? It was almost, I think it was three seasons.
At least.
And, you know, now
he's
the best quarterback in the game. But, you know, remember, that's how it was done. You drafted a quarterback, and he watched for a year or two to learn the game behind whoever your starter was. And now it's no longer like that. I mean, you draft these guys, and you want them on the field as soon as possible.
Yeah, but they're not always that impactful when they first start playing. They take their lumps a little bit, and it's been known to happen. I've seen it happen.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, and that's the tough part. And, you know, everything is just so different in the NFL. I mean, we're talking bigger, faster, stronger athletes across the board, you know, that they're going up against. And, I mean, you know, even the worst team in the NFL would probably beat the best college team handily. You know, it probably wouldn't even be a real good matchup. And so there are no weeks off. You know, there's no week where you're playing, you know, as my father used to say, the Ray Charles School for the Blind, you know, in your college matchups where, you know, you can run 60 to nothing or something like that. You know, that doesn't happen in the NFL.
Not so much anymore. I remember years ago when a heralded college player was selected as a quarterback. And boy, they take their lumps for years. For example, John Unitas. I remember when he first started playing, he was hammered pretty badly initially before he kind of figured it out.
Yeah, well, you know, you can look back. I mean, remember the Texans drafted David Carr. Obviously, Derek Carr is his brother who plays for the Raiders. He was the quarterback they were going to build around. I think he was sacked a record like – I want to say it was 50-plus times as a rookie, and he was pretty much never the same. He was never, you know, able to develop, and I honestly just think he was probably gun-shy from getting his brains beat in as a rookie.
Yep, that'll happen. That could do a head number on you, and not talking about injuries. I'm talking about from a psychological standpoint. And you're right, he was never the same.
Guys have more capability. They're considered more athletic, you know, than, you know, quarterbacks used to be. You know, and you can see the difference. I mean, you can look at, like, you know, the Tom Brady's and the Drew Brees's and the guys like that who are still at the top of their game. And, you know, these guys coming in, very, very few of them are those pocket passers who can – you know, who can stand in there with the rush going all around them. You know, they're looking to get out on the edge. And honestly, you know, in a lot of situations, a lot of these guys are run-first guys. They'd rather run than throw it.
Yeah. Well, Tom Brady was one of them. Wasn't he selected way down the line?
Yeah, he was a top draft pick.
So he shocked everybody eventually.
Yeah. Well, you know, and even like Drew Brees was a second-round pick. He didn't even go in the first round. I believe he was an early second-round pick, but, you know, still we're talking about a guy who's a big-time, obviously, Hall of Fame quarterback who, for whatever reason, mostly because they considered him short, didn't end up going in the first round.
Right. Yeah, well, you think with all the scouting now and all the different techniques that they employ, they don't always get it right. You're going to see a guy out of the second or even the third round develop into a great quarterback, and you can't miss guys. Just miss. They don't become the player you think they're going to be.
Yeah, well, you know, and you know the other thing in Brees' case, you know, he went to Purdue, and they threw the ball all the time. And back then, you know, he didn't take snaps from under center. He was in the shotgun a lot, and that was considered a negative. Where now, I mean, every quarterback you're going to see drafted rarely, and I mean rarely, takes snaps from under center. You know, everybody's in the shotgun or that little short pistol that they call. So, you know, it's just the game has kind of changed, and it's like, you know, this is what we have. So we just got to kind of see.
Still can't see the shotgun as a standard formation to me. I mean, it's it works once in a while, but I wouldn't recommend it as completely used by the quarterback over the course of a game.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, in some places it's a little more difficult than others, depending on the weather. You know, obviously in the places like Miami and, you know, California and those kind of places, it's a little easier to use all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you get to some of these other spots where it gets ugly in the winter and you're playing outside, you can't do it.
No, that's for sure. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the draft, and always looking forward to the new football season cropping up in some period of time, some months, what, 6 months, 7 months before the season? No, before that. We're talking about maybe, what, 3-4 months before the season starts. So it's not that far away.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
first day is next week, so you're talking about 3-4 months only. September, right? In September they start for real.
Yeah, right around or right after Labor Day they normally start.
Right.
So.
Right.
You know, they'll be up and running before you know it. And I mean, yeah, I think it's a 7 o'clock start for the draft again, our time, you know, here in the Central Standard Time Zone. So, you can jump on. And I think the Cardinals do have the first pick again in the second round, obviously. They haven't moved it or anything. So.
Well, they've been kind of an afterthought for the last few years. You think that maybe they would finally develop a respectable team.
Yeah, well, you know, look how long it took Cleveland to kind of get itself back into shape after the fiasco that went on there. I mean, it took years to get them, you know, even serviceable. And, you know, now everybody's on the bandwagon. Everybody thinks they're going to be a playoff team and, you know, they're good to go. But, I guess we'll see.
I wonder how many of today's fans realize who the initial city was where the Cardinals first played.
Yeah, well, probably, you know, nobody unless you looked it up. And with as much as they've moved around, can you, who's going to remember?
Right. And, of course, I seem to remember the Chicago Cardinals playing at Comiskey Park.
So.
Many years ago.
You know, they went from here to Arizona or from here to St. Louis.
St. Louis, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, did they have another stop before they went to Arizona, or did they go?
And they moved around a little bit. Maybe they—I don't know if they did went from St. Louis right directly to Arizona or not. There may be another stop along the way.
So, yeah, I'm trying to. I don't. You know, maybe not. For some reason I thought they went to Los Angeles for a little bit, but I think that was just the Rams that swapped all that out and kind of ended up going back and forth. So
yeah, it was amazing that for many years Los Angeles had no pro football team, and now they have, what, two, three,
Two.
Altogether.
So, you know, well, you know, I mean, to be fair, when they had those teams, nobody was going to watch them.
No, no, they used to play at the Coliseum and cavernous place to play football, and I never seen them draw that well, but they always seemed to have good teams, and I was quite surprised when they left L.A. For so many years.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's all, you know how this goes. I mean, it's all about stadiums. You know, if you can't get your stadium, you leave. You know, I mean, remember the White Sox basically held up the city of Chicago. You know, give us a new stadium or we're going to Tampa.
Yeah, they almost, the fans don't realize in Chicago, at least the way, how close they were to losing the White Sox franchise here. It almost happened.
So, you know, yeah, you know, that's, you know, that's how teams do it. I think the, I believe it was the Vikings who actually had a plan in place to move. They were going to leave Minnesota unless they got that new stadium, and all of a sudden, magically, they got the new stadium.
They got the new stadium, yeah. I'm trying to think of how many cities have the four major sports now. Quite a few, but certainly St. Louis doesn't. They don't have basketball. They don't have football now, so they are a really small market when you think about it. They only have two of the four major sports.
Yeah, it's actually kind of surprising how, you know, you look at a, you know, what would be considered a major market, and, you know, they don't, you know, they don't have all four. You know, in some cases,
no.
They don't have, you know, they only have two.
Yeah, it's surprising, but, of course, the major markets like New York and now Los Angeles, Chicago, all have their major teams, and Pittsburgh doesn't. Pittsburgh doesn't. Oh, yeah, Pittsburgh does. Pittsburgh doesn't have an NBA team, though, do they?
No, yeah, no, there's no NBA team. You know, and to be fair, I mean, technically those New York football teams play in New Jersey.
That's true.
You know, I mean, I know they want to call them New York, and I get that, you know, because if they were the New Jersey whatever, it wouldn't be the same. But, you know, let's face it, yeah, they play in New Jersey.
Right.
So.
And don't forget, in the NBA, besides the Knicks, they have the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah. So, you know, and well, at least the Nets made it into the playoffs this year, but the Knicks are just a classic mess with that owner. He's just such a joke.
Right.
So.
Well, talking about the NBA, by the way, I seriously do not think that Denver will lose that seventh and deciding game. Because they're just so hard to beat on their home court. I never thought it would get this far, though, but it has gone to the seventh game.
Oh, I didn't even realize that was a game seven. So, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what are they playing tomorrow? I know, I think Golden State. Yeah, Golden State plays tonight. They're in game six, I believe, with that series. So.
Right. And they've been kind of complacent in this series to lose two games like that.
Yeah. They, you know, it's funny, you know, for being in the playoffs, they look incredibly uninterested, you know, at times. And it's just kind of like, guys, you know, you're in the playoffs here. Somebody want to kind of let you know.
Well, you know that they're going to step it up when they go to the next later rounds.
Yeah, you know, you would hope. I mean, you know, you never know with these guys anymore. I mean, they've got so much else going on that, they get distracted or whatever else they have, you know, going in their lives. Maybe they're worried about their commercial
right.
shoots or,
you know,
however
you know.
That other stuff.
I'll be interested to see if Milwaukee makes it all the way into the NBA Finals this year.
So. Yeah, well, I was gonna, ask you while we were on football. I'm interested to know what you think the Kansas City Chiefs should do with this, you know, Tyreek Hill situation. You know, he was apparently recorded as, I guess the best way to look at it was threatening to hit his 3-year-old son in the the chest or something weird like that, and they actually have it recorded. You know, I know his, I don't honestly know if he's even married, but his wife or fiance or whatever it is had mentioned that she was apparently scared of him, you know, and it's just all kind of an odd situation all of a sudden. Now, remember, the Chiefs last year, they cut Kareem Hunt immediately when that video came out of him kicking that woman. You know, to be fair, the video I saw, he didn't kick her that hard. Obviously, yes, it was still incredibly heinous of him to do, but everybody made it seem like he laid her out. And all, you know, the video all I saw was he ended up kicking her in the rear end while she was squatting down. But this is a little more out there with this, and I'm, you know, they haven't cut him like they did with Hunt. Do they stay in that deal where they, you know, they've kind of set the precedence that that's what they do, or
now,
what the hell do they do with
him, though, right? He didn't really touch him, though. He threatened him.
So, yeah, I, you know, that's the weird thing is, like, they have him on tape threatening him. But, I mean, we don't know if or when anything has happened past that.
And I'm sure there's been other parents who have done something similar, right?
It says they released audio of Hill and his fiance, in which she actually says that Hill hit their 3-year-old son. So according to her, he's hit him.
Is child services be involved with this yet, or? Have they checked to make sure any bruises on the boy or anything?
It does say that police had been investigating. So, and now the Chiefs have suspended him from all team activities, you know, for the foreseeable future. Who knows what that actually means with, you know, the NFL. But, you know, Adrian Peterson went through something like this, and he ended up missing, I think it was 15 games. You know, so basically he missed an entire season when, you know, they went after him for spanking his son with what I believe was a, what did they call it? It ended up being a stick, but they had a different, another name they used for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they can prove that he actually laid his hands on his son, not just a routine spanking, but he could be suspended for a similar number of games, if not released outright.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, the thing with releasing him outright is he'll, as talented as he is, he'll get another opportunity. I mean, Kareem Hunt got signed by the Browns. The Bears really wanted him. You know, he ended up going with the Browns. You know, I know the 49ers released a linebacker last year. I'm drawing a blank on his name after his ex-girlfriend said that he abused her and all those charges turned out to be false. They released him, and I think the Redskins signed him right away. So, you know, if you got talent, you know, you find new work right away, and Hill's got talent. I don't know. I mean, I guess there's just kind of no way to stop this, is there, unless you just start banning these guys for life or something?
Yeah, and you would hope that it doesn't always turn out that these allegations are true. As you pointed out, the one player who supposedly had done something turned out he didn't do anything at all, and he was quickly signed with another team. So I guess it works both ways. You have to be pretty sure about an incident that the allegations are true before you make a decision.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's always the tough part. And, you know, I mean, with athletes and, you know, in the eyes of, you know, of a lot of people, when you see these things, they're definitely guilty, you know, and need to be proven innocent. You know, it's not innocent, you know, until proven guilty. It's the exact opposite. You know, I mean, these guys are guilty. I'm not saying Hill didn't do this. You know, because obviously I don't know, we don't know, you know, we're not privy to the situation. His fiance is saying he hit the child, and she's also the one who said that, you know, she was afraid of him. So I don't know. You know, you do wonder. I mean, I know Luke Walton is going through a similar situation where a lady just kind of came out of the blue. And I think this incident happened quite a while ago, and said that he, I believe,
yeah,
sexually abused her. So, yeah, you got to wonder how much validity is to that, because there's no criminal case. She's just taking him to civil court, so she's looking for a monetary judgment.
That's
a little more serious,
yeah,
involving a child.
That's the thing that sometimes bothers me a little bit. I mean, when these things happen, or these charges come up years later, you think to yourself, are they really true, or did they just want a payout?
Yeah, and that's the one kind of sad thing about that is, in certain situations, that's the first question you have to ask. Because you would wonder, and I understand in some situations, it's difficult to come forward. But yeah, you even when you come forward, well, why not press charges? Why go to right to a civil suit?
Yeah, it does come down to he says, she says situation, and it's up to the accuser to have some kind of legitimate proof before it could be gone. The case can be carried further.
Yeah, the other thing, of course, is money makes a lot of these things go away. Greg Hardy was he was actually found guilty. I don't remember what the charge was. They appealed, and the witness, who was his former girlfriend, refused to testify. And then when it came out, it turned out that he had given her, like, I think it was close to $5 or $8 million. And then she basically recanted and refused to testify. So, money does make these things go away, as weird as it is to say.
For sure. Do you think that there is more of this occurring in football than in other sports? I know it's happened in baseball, too, of course, but do you think that the propensity for violence in the sport adds to the home life situation so that it's more prevalent in football than other sports?
It seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, I've always wondered. I know there's also a high propensity for this to happen in mixed martial arts, with mixed martial arts fighters. I can't remember. I remember Dan and I talked about it. God, it may have been over a year ago now, and it was a really high percentage of, mixed martial arts fighters who ended up, being accused of a domestic violence type situation. But it does seem like there are a lot of, either there are a lot of football players involved, or they're the ones who always seem to get the headlines when it happens. One of the two.
Right. But there does appear to be some kind of a correlation between a violent sport and the amount of these cases that go forward. Like you said, MMA, football, although as we both know, it's also happened in baseball, but not nearly to the extent that it does in those other sports.
No, but, oddly, you don't hear a lot about it in, like, hockey, which is, pretty violent.
Yeah, that's surprising. But they're a different breed of cat. We always talk about the hockey players in terms of toughness, and they seem to do it on the ice, but off the ice, they're different. There were some pretty nasty incidents that took place in hockey recently in the playoffs. They were pretty brutal.
Well, did you see the refs came out and said they actually blew that call in Game 7 that cost Las Vegas the game?
Yeah, it seems it was a 5 minute. I know it was a major penalty. Was it a 5 minute major?
Yeah, because he drew blood.
Right. Even with a 5 minute major, they score what, 4 goals in that five minute penalty?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to happen very often. You might see one, maybe two, because when the first goal scores, of course, because it's a 5-minute major, it doesn't stop the penalty. It continues on, unlike a 2-minute penalty. But 4 goals in 5 minutes, even shorthanded, is kind of staggering when you think about it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I don't know how much of a, you know, how much of the outcome it changed. I guess it gives, you know, Las Vegas something to talk about. But I did see, you know, the NHL stepped right up, and they took the rest of the playoff refereeing duties away from that group. You know, unlike the NFL, who kind of sits on its hands and, you know, oh well, we'll look into it type of thing. You know, the NHL didn't mince words. They just went right at it and said, okay, you guys are done.
The thing I'm asking now, I'm asking you, you might know more about it than I do, but isn't it an automatic 5-minute penalty if blood is drawn?
Yes.
Where is the mistake made?
You know, that's what I didn't understand. I looked at the article and I didn't really understand what the mistake was. I'm thinking they just kind of decided it shouldn't have been a 5-minute, you know, it shouldn't have been a major, even though he did draw blood.
Yeah, but as I'm pointing out, I think the rule is if blood is drawn, it's a 5-minute major. So I'm not sure what the mistake was. Maybe there was just a minimal amount of blood. I don't know if they say that there has to be certain amount of blood drawn before the penalty occurs, or just a minor, like a nosebleed. It's not a 5-minute. I'm not sure how they draw the line there.
Yeah, I've always kind of wondered that myself. Is how do you make that decision? I mean, blood is blood. So, you know, where does it go? You know, I mean,
that's
a lot to put on a ref's shoulders to try to decide someone's intent.
And the apology really didn't cover that at all as to why the mistake was made, considering the fact that blood was drawn. So I think there should have been a further explanation, or more detailed explanation, at least.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, one, you know, what, you know, I, like I said, I mean, it gives the, you know, it gives Las Vegas something to look forward to for the off season.
Right, that's true.
So, you know, just one of those, odd situations. But yeah, you know, like I said, I like the fact that, you know, the NHL stepped up right away, because they're the only league that would have done that. You know, baseball drags its feet. You know, I mean, we've seen how many just embarrassing umpiring calls and the guy's right back out there. There's no comeuppance, whatsoever. So
wasn't there a baseball game a few years ago, and maybe you might remember this, in which the mistake was so blatant that they actually started the game over again from the point in which the flagrant error occurred.
Well, I know there's been quite a few embarrassing calls, but I don't remember that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if that happened or not. Well, it'd be hard to find out, but there are just, as you pointed out, so many bad calls in baseball. Of course, with the instant replay, does help sometimes to reverse a bad call.
Yeah, to some extent, you know, it will help. But then I wonder, you know, how much of it actually helps.
And there's still controversy on any kind of a play at the plate.
Yeah,
there's always the possibility of a challenge. And that, I don't know, that rule should be tightened up a little bit. I mean, it seems like every time there's a play at the plate now, you wonder if there's going to be a challenge. Either the player did something, the sliding player did something wrong, or the catcher was blocking the plate incorrectly. And that can't be easy, especially for the catcher.
Yeah, well, you know, and like I haven't seen the call lately where the, you know, the catcher has been called for blocking home plate. They seem to have went away from that a little bit. So
yeah, there was a call in the Cub game recently, and the runner was out at the plate, and it looked like the catcher did everything, and they still had a challenge, and fortunately, though, the call stood because he did nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong. I couldn't figure out why they even wanted to take another look at it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's in some cases it's just the point of, well, we got the challenge, we might as well use it. Let's take a shot here. You know, you never know. I mean, maybe you get something that goes in your favor.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, and again, that's another tough one. I mean, you've got to decide, you know, did the throw bring the catcher into the runner's path? Did he have the ball? Because obviously if the catcher has the ball well beforehand, he can block the runner. You know, he doesn't have to give him a sliding lane then because he's going to tag him.
I'm afraid we're going to have to, look forward to other calls like that coming up in the future. I see a lot more of those challenges coming up on a play at the plate, especially a bang-bang play at the plate. And maybe that mars the game a little bit.
Yeah, well, my biggest problem is just the fact that the replay takes so damn long. You know, it's like we want to speed up the game, but yet we're going to take all our time to look at these replays.
Yeah, isn't there some kind of a time limit now on replays that they should make the decision rather relatively quickly, in a couple of minutes at least?
Yeah, but even so, you know, I've seen guys go way over them when, you know, they have to. So, you know, but, you know, since we did wander into baseball, I have to ask you, are you as excited for the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. debut as everybody else is?
Well, he's, as far as I'm concerned, this guy cannot miss being a top ball player, but I'm not super excited about it. Maybe if the Cubs had him,
yeah,
I might be, but I think he's going to be a good ball player. Of course, I said that about a lot of other can't-miss phenoms, too, and they haven't got the job done. But this guy looks like he's a real deal.
Yeah, it's been kind of humorous watching the MLB Network, and actually not so much humorous as just the network is a complete joke, because they're working it in like we're seeing the greatest baseball player to ever play the game, and he hasn't even debuted yet. So they are really just out of control with this. And I mean, it's borderline to the point where it's stupid. And I just kind of stopped turning the network on for the last few days because it's all they were talking about. I mean, they were working him into highlights of other games, and it was like, yeah, okay, that's enough of this. I'm gone.
Well, you know what? He's going to come to bat when he plays in the major league game. They're going to probably break away and show him batting at least for the first four or five at bats. You know that's going to happen.
The MLB Network is actually showing that game live tonight. It's Oakland at Toronto, and they officially are supposed to start at 6:07, and that's their game for tonight. So there you go.
And the only reason they're showing that game is because he's playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, otherwise there would be, you know, no interest. And we did have no surprise, we got a postponement already. The Tampa Bay Rays at the Boston Red Sox game is already postponed. I'll be interested to see if, like, the Mets can get their game in against the Brewers and if the Nationals can get their game in against the Padres, because I know they're
East
in
Coast,
for some
The East Coast has had a lot of rain today, so there's going to be more than one postponement, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you know, and my guess is tomorrow we won't see the White Sox and the Tigers play, considering we're actually supposed to get measurable April snow here tomorrow. So my guess is that game will be postponed very quickly.
Well, how much are we supposed to get? Yeah, an inch or two, they'll play.
I saw 3 to 8.
What? 3 to 8?
Yeah.
Wow. Tomorrow was a very pleasant day.
Yeah, 3-8 to the city in north and 1-4 to the city in south, just depending on where you are. So, yeah, I don't assume we'll see that White Sox game played tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I have no great plans for tomorrow, although I do have things going on for Sunday. I hope the weather is a little better then.
Yeah, it's actually supposed to warm up Sunday, so you'll be okay. But real quick, here's the rest of the schedule. We got San Diego at Washington, Miami at Philadelphia, Oakland at Toronto, Milwaukee at New York, which is the Mets, at Atlanta, Cleveland at Houston, Detroit here in Chicago against the White Sox, Baltimore at Minnesota, Los Angeles, which is the Angels, at Kansas City, Cincinnati at St. Louis, Chicago, this turn the Cubs, at Arizona, Pittsburgh at Los Angeles, where we go with the Dodgers this time, Texas at Seattle, and New York, the Yankees, this time at the Giants.
Well, I do have to say a couple of things. Number one, I don't think the Cubs in Arizona will be postponed because of snow. I'm guaranteeing that. I have to ask you a question. Because you're an expert on baseball, and are you surprised that Harper is not setting the National League on fire with his great bat in Philadelphia so far?
No, you know, I mean, what's the difference between this year and last year? What, he hit .240 last year?
Yeah. And so, I saw one report recently, maybe you saw it too, it said he's the most overrated player in baseball. And I wonder
he was the most overrated player.
And, boy, based on his start now with Philadelphia, new team, he really wants to get out to a good start. He may be hitting higher than .240, but not much.
Yeah, looking here, he's hitting .253. With 5 homers, 15 RBIs is where he's at. He doesn't, you know, he does have 7 doubles. But I thought maybe being in a better lineup would help him because, you know, last year a lot of times he was pitched around. You know, Washington really didn't have anybody to hit behind him. But, you know, in Philadelphia, you know, they have some guys you can put behind him. I mean, you're looking at, you know, the Reese Hoskins or, you know, JT Realmuto, who everybody's really high on. You know, you could even plug Odubel Herrera in there if you wanted to. I know he's hurt right now. So, you know, there are guys they could plug in behind him and give him some protection. But it just, you know, you got to kind of wonder, is this who he is? Is he a 250, 260 hitter?
And if so, as a 250, 260 hitter, he signed a hell of a contract, didn't he?
Yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, obviously if he did, you know, you give Scott Boras a lot of credit because he's going to make a boatload of money to hit squat. So.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the Cubs fans are a little bit happier now that everybody was so sad that the Cubs didn't make the move and grab him. Maybe they're not feeling that way quite so much anymore.
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, like we always say, you know, we're only 25 games in, so we'll have to kind of see how this plays out. But yeah, you know, you gotta kind of wonder if there's, you know, any buyer's remorse or anything like that yet on the part of the Phillies.
Yeah. I don't think maybe a little too soon for that, but try them at the end of the season, and if he's still hitting .240, .250, they may be rethinking their decision.
Yeah, because, you know, and, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, last year, you know, it was all blamed on the lineup. You know, it was the fact that Washington didn't have anybody to protect him. And, you know, he did hit much better in the second half of the season than he did in the first half. Sooner or later, you just got to kind of start asking the questions of, you know, is he worth it?
Right, and as long as we're on baseball, once again, I think you're an astute observer of baseball. In your opinion, what is the problem with Chris Bryan? I know it's early, but I'm concerned. I'm really concerned about the guy.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen really enough of his at-bats, basically because I'll get frustrated with the game and turn it off before I get to watch a lot of it. But, yeah, I am starting to get a little worried here. I mean, he's only hitting, what, about 230, and he doesn't seem to have any power. I keep kind of hoping it's just a slow start. But, yeah, you know, if we start to get to the 50-game mark and this is still going on, it's going to be time to ask some questions here.
Yeah, exactly right. And I'm not – I know that everybody was talking about Rizzo off to a slow start, but he always gets off to a slow start. And as he did last year, and at the end of the year, he wound up at 25 home runs and 101 RBIs with a .280 batting average. So I'm certainly not worried about him as I am about Chris Bryant. And maybe Schwarber too. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, the team is playing better, but you know, there's still a lot of questions. I mean, you know, obviously Bryant hasn't played well. Neither is Schwarber. Almora. I'm surprised Almora has struggled as much as he did. You know, even Ben Zobrist is hanging around about 230, and he's been a better hitter than
right.
that. You know, you just wonder if. You know, maybe they can all kind of get going at the same time and they'll go on a nice winning streak, you know, or something to that effect. You know, it's really the only way you can look at it. Again, you know, we're 20, whatever games into the season. What are they? They're 23 games
in. 23 games in, yeah. Well, I think Zobrist 38 or 39?
He's 38 right now.
Yeah, I think this is it for him. I don't see him hitting much more than 250, 260 this season. I think he'll retire at the end of this year.
Yeah, well, he is in the last year of his deal, and I think that's kind of what everybody expects. So, but yeah, it's just kind of, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, you've got to kind of wait and see. I mean, I am starting to wonder if Kyle Schwarber's ever going to be that 40-homer guy we were promised in his rookie season.
Right, right. It'll be interesting to see if the bats come alive over the weekend because they'll be playing in warm conditions.
Yeah.
And good hitters prefer hitting in warm conditions. Of course, they're not expecting 100 degrees like they're going to be getting. But maybe the warm weather will wake up the bats a little bit. We'll see.
Yeah, and, you know, that's always helpful. I mean, obviously, it's a lot better to hit in – you know, 90 or 100 degree weather than it is to hit in 35 degree weather. So, yeah, you know, we'll see. But yeah, you know, it's so long to go that it's hard to be, you know, worried about anybody unless, you know, it was Chris Davis where he was 0 for 54. Well, that's a problem. You know, then you worry about that guy. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot guys lower than 230 where Chris Bryant is now. Actually, it's 232. So it's, you know, while it's of some concern, you just can't, you know, you can't worry too much about it until we get some more games under their belt.
I suppose, but look at his stats, though, besides a .232 average. He only has one home run, which he hit on opening day, and he has less than 10 RBIs. What, 6 RBIs, 7 RBIs? Very, very small. And this is a guy who drove in close to 100 runs 2 years in a row.
Yeah, you know, but there's no saying he's not going to get there when it's all said and done. You know, I mean, we're so far away from it. You know, who knows where he ends up? I mean, if he gets hot, you know, he could have a 5-6 homer week, and you know, everything's fine and everybody's happy. So
yeah,
you know, that's the you know, and I mean, Cub fans are a little neurotic as it is. I mean, a guy strikes out a couple times and they're ready to ship him out of town. So, you know, it's just kind of how it's the nature of the way it goes here.
Yeah, and, you know, it's – I remember the Cub player that no one heard much about, but Jack Perko said, once the weather heats up, this guy's going to be setting the league on fire with his bat. And he was right. I mean, Walt Warren, he was never a Hall of Famer, but he was a very, very good – turned out to be a very good hitter for the Cubs. Maybe warm weather will help.
You have to remember when Javi Baez was brought up in 2014, he was pretty much an embarrassment here. He hit a .169 and struck out 95 times in 52 games, and everybody was ready to chase him away. Are they giving him up now?
No, that's for sure. And I noticed, and I really respect the fact that he can sometimes go for a two-strike pitch and chop the ball into right field for a hit, which he did the other day. He never did that years ago. He never, ever did that. So he's running the game.
We just got to let these things play out. But, all right, let's move on here because it's that time. You hit on all your predictions last week. You had the Cubs winning both series with no sweeps, so you were right on. You're now 5-3 for your weekend predictions, so we move into this week. As we were talking about it, it's three games in Arizona, so you know the deal. The first question is, do they win the series?
I will say they will win the series 2 out of 3.
And then the second one is, will they sweep? So you're going with 2 out of 3, so that's a no. And then they have this odd little two-game series in Seattle, so this is a little difficult. Do they sweep the Mariners, and then do they win both games?
No. I go for a split in Seattle.
All right, so they're not going to win the series, and they're not going to sweep. There you go. We're all set then. So we, of course, will check in next Friday and see how things go. So,
see how poorly I did. Since I'm going 3 out of 5.
Well, you know, you got them all right. We'll see if you can keep rolling. You know, you're on a four-game roll here.
Well, it'll be interesting. And that's a crazy two-game series in Seattle. That's a long way to go, even from Arizona to Seattle, and just for two games. And then did they come home after that?
That is odd that you go from Arizona to Seattle to just play two. And then, I think, let me double see if I can double check it here real quick. I think they come home after that one. But let me see if I can hunt it down here real quick. Yeah, they actually come home to host the Cardinals.
Well, that'll be huge.
So, the weird, series out there, they get a day off, and then, they're hosting St. Louis, who, as we know, has been super tough.
Yeah, they've moved in the first place. And, Seattle, that's the furthest team in the league, isn't it, in the majors. They're right near the Canadian border. I mean, they're as far as the upper Pacific, upper Midwest, Northwest as you can get. So that's a long trip for just two games.
Yeah, and that's for it to just be a two-game series is what makes it really odd.
Yeah, very strange.
That's how it works, how the computer spit it out for them.
Yeah, and
they're in Arizona. I mean, they could be coming from New York or something to, have to play that series.
And we look forward to the end of May when the Cubs play down in St. Louis and what kind of reaction the St. Louis fans will give Chris Bryant when he comes up to that.
I'm sure they'll remember. We'll have to see how that works out. So,
it was a joke, but I think the joke is going to backfire on him.
Yeah, sadly, if he doesn't start hitting, it's going to. So. Available for you to listen to anytime you want at TuneIn.com.